This happened when I was only 5 years old, so most of the information I gathered was through my parents. I lived in the middle-class neighborhood in Chicago in a two-bedroom apartment with my parents. The apartment building was gated, and you needed a passcode in order to enter through the front. The backside of the building, however, was open and led to the alleyway where residents could throw out their trash, which was common in Chicago. My upstairs neighbor was a woman, around 40 years old, who lived alone with her cats. I know, cliche, but she was a sweet lady. One time she went on vacation and asked my parents if they could feed her cats, and she left them a key. While she was away, my dad tried to enter her home to feed her cats, however, the keyhole wouldn't budge. My dad felt bad, but he couldn't get in to feed them until the lady came back from her vacation. My father was so apologetic for not being able to feed them, but the lady nonetheless understood and even offered to show my dad how to turn the keyhole, as she went on vacation often and needed someone to tend to her cats, so my parents kept the key on the key hook. My mother worked a 9-to-5, and my dad worked night shifts in order to not have to leave me with a babysitter. My mother and I often stayed up and watched Friends together. I swear this is where my love for the show developed. Anyway, one night, as usual, my dad was off at work working his usual night shift, and my mother and I were up at night watching our show. While the show played in, my mother recounted hearing footsteps upstairs, but not the usual set of footsteps followed by the patter of the kitty's paw steps. No. This was multiple footsteps and muffled talking. My mother didn't hear any screaming and just heard some music playing. As this was a Saturday night, my mother just thought that the lady upstairs had company over and didn't think much of it. Sunday came and went, and on Monday, my mom decided to call off for some reason or another. We were all laying on my parents' king-size bed when we hear a knock on the door around 11 a.m. My dad opened the door to two police officers and a woman who was the upstairs lady's friend. The police, along with the friend, explained to my parents that the lady had failed to show up to work, which was not like her, and she was not answering her phone or her door. The police officer asked if my parents had seen or heard from her, but my parents said no. My dad remembered that he had a key and offered it to the police officer. My dad joined the two police officers and the lady's friend. When the officer went to put the key in the keyhole, it wouldn't turn, so my dad jumped in and showed them how to open it. According to my dad, the two police officers gave each other a strange look but continued to enter the apartment as the friend and my father followed. They were greeted by the cats, but there didn't seem to be anything out of place until they reached the room at the end. When they walked in, they found the lady with a pillow over her face, blood-stained clothing from what looked like stab wounds. The friend cried out hysterically, but was held back by an officer and my father so as not to taint the scene. The other police officer began to call in the wellness check-turned-murder scene. As more police, forensics, and detectives showed up at the scene, my parents were questioned separately. My dad was asked to go down to the station for further questioning. He tells me now it was because he became a suspect since he had a key and knew how to open the door. This was important because there was no sign of forced entry. When they were able to corroborate his alibi, they let him go. A week had passed and my parents were able to gather information from the police. They said that the woman's debit card was used at an ATM where they were able to obtain a picture of a man, and they released the image to the public to see if they would get a hit on it. Apparently, a kindergartner told her teacher her dad was on TV, and this somehow led to her father being detained and charged along with three of his friends with the murder of this lady. What still rocks me to the core is what follows. When they questioned the men, they confessed and told the police everything. They told a story about how for weeks they watched a young Latina woman with her little curly-haired daughter, studying them. They knew when the father went off to work and how long the two, daughter and mother, were alone in the apartment. They studied the building for weeks and knew that the backside was open and led directly to the back doors of each apartment. They concocted a plan to break in to do God knows what to my mother and I. The night had finally come when they knew my father had left. They were waiting at our back door when they heard someone coming down the steps with a trash bag. It was the lady. She locked eyes with them and knew something was off immediately and turned to run back to her apartment. She, unfortunately, was not quick enough. They grabbed her and pushed her through her back door while muffling her screams. She stood no chance, and I shiver at the thought of what that poor woman suffered through, and how that could have easily have been my mother and I. I'd had my eye on this place for a month or two and was hoping for better weather to come around. However, circumstances forced my hand and I had to go in sooner than I planned. The homeowners posted up a for sale sign, and with the market being the way it was at the time, I assumed I didn't have much time before it sold. The house caught my attention in the first place just after Christmas. I happened to be driving by after casing another place and noticed all the boxes stacked up next to their trash cans. Among the best things they'd received was a pair of LED computer monitors and one of those 40-inch LED smart TVs. Mind you, at this time, stuff like this was still fairly expensive. There were also a laptop and PlayStation 3 box in the pile. All this cool new stuff made me jealous. I know I may joke, but leaving out all these boxes is an open invitation to thieves. The best thing to do is break them down and put them inside your garbage cans. The term, out of sight, out of mind, applies great in this kind of situation. There was a couple of other places on my list before this one, but the day the sign went up, I knew I needed to act fast. So just after lunch, I climbed through a window in the garage and snuck into the house. Most of the afternoon, at least until 3 p.m., was mine to browse. Their comings and goings were very familiar to me by then, and I was confident I had plenty of time to work. Inside of the house, everything was top quality and the air smelled clean and fresh. I can't say I expected anything less. The home itself was modest, but just from their cars, it was clear they were well-heeled. I did a cursory glance through the living area before I moved on to the bedrooms. There wasn't much to grab, and I continued on to the first floor. As I opened it, I was smacked in the face by a wall of stench. It could only be feces, but it wasn't obvious until I looked down and saw the dog kennels. They must lock their dogs up while they're gone, and the dogs must have crapped in the kennels. I couldn't help but feel bad for the poor beasts. There were better ways to keep your dogs from damaging your home. Then, the size of the kennels struck me. They were massive. I mean Great Dane-sized boxes. I thought about letting them out. I leaned down to talk to one of them. Yes, I talked to dogs, so what? And what I saw shocked me to my core. I leaned over to see how bad these poor creatures' conditions really were. But instead of a dog, the face that looked back at me was a child's. It appeared to be a girl, and she didn't look to be more than 5 years old. I became furious instantly. I quickly looked over to the other kennel and was met face to face by another girl that looked identical. Why in the effing world were there a pair of twin little girls locked up in boxes, forced to wallow in their own feces? These were normal-looking, beautiful children. No valid reason came to me. I realized I was becoming so wound up, tears had started pouring down my face. I couldn't think of anything other than getting them out of that house. The idea of stealing having long left my thoughts. Right before I opened the first kennel, I stopped myself. Hold it right there, I thought. I was going to have to do this right, or my future, in addition to theirs, would be screwed. It only took a moment before I figured it out. I leaned over and made a promise to them I was going to get them out of their prison, and soon. The terrified sets of blue eyes that looked back at me almost made me change my mind, but I held to my purpose and rapidly slipped out of the house. In spite of the rage I felt coursing through me, I continued onto my car and dialed 911. This was almost opposite to everything I'd ever believed, but it was no longer just about me. When the operator came on, I told her I wanted to stay anonymous, but my son had recently been in the home and saw the cages with the two children. He was very upset, as well as myself, and I demanded the cops check it out. She sounded a little skeptical, but she'd pass it on, nonetheless. I wasn't totally sure the cops were going to believe me, so I also called the Crime Stoppers number and told them the same story. I was so furious by now I didn't need to act upset to get my point across. This operator seemed much more interested in what I had to say, but even then, I still had no guarantee that anything would be done. I wasn't going to be able to think of anything else, so I sat a few blocks away and waited, and waited, and waited, and waited. The hours drug by so slowly, I must have smoked 2 packs of cigarettes in that time. The mother came home a few hours in, and I prayed like never before that the girls wouldn't say anything about my visit. Not too much later, a pair of cop cars pulled up in front of the house. My first thought was that they had said something. However, the longer I thought on it, I realized that there was no way she was going to call the cops over a burglary. She'd be screwed the second she told the story. I knew then that the cops were there to look around. A few more cars and a pair of ambulances showed up soon after, and that was when I was sure that they were safe. I'm not ashamed to say that I cried like a little girl. When the cops brought that rotten woman out in cuffs, I could finally relax and go home. According to the news, both parents were convicted of a whole slew of crimes and sentenced for up to 15 to 30 year stretches. Not long enough as far as I'm concerned, but I was pleased to know those poor girls were far from those awful people. When it comes to the twins, not much is out there. Because of their age, there's no names or information of where they landed. All I can say is that they went into the system. Now, being a product of the system, I can't guarantee their future will be great. Regardless of that, I'm positive it will be better than it was before. A few years ago, I was renting a house in Northern California. The neighborhood was just outside the suburbs. It seemed like the perfect balance of having space and having nice neighbors close enough not to feel isolated. The area had no street lights, so it was very dark at night, especially if there were clouds blocking the moonlight. It didn't bother me though. It made my little house feel even more quaint on dark nights. I got home from work one day in midwinter. It was a cloudy night, so pulling up to my house, I saw only what my headlights and front porch light illuminated. When I got out of my car, I caught a whiff of cigarette smoke. That was odd, as I had never smelled that before around the house. I didn't see anyone nearby, so I ignored it and went inside. I had just got off a shift with a few hours of overtime, so I felt pretty tired. Even though it wasn't even 7 yet, I decided to call it a night. I woke up sometime later, sure that I had heard a noise inside my house. I wasn't worried right away because my friend would sometimes stop by to use my shower after work on his way to his night classes. I even gave him a spare key so he could stop by even if I wasn't home. He would always text me to let me know beforehand though, and I hadn't heard my phone go off. I reached over to my bedside table and picked up my cell phone to see if my friend had sent me a text. The bright light from my phone's screen and number pad blinded me. These were the days before phones had a light sensor that would dim the screen in the dark, and this particular phone was so bright I could use it as a flashlight. Through squinted eyes, I could make out that it was 9-something, but I couldn't tell if I had an unread text or not. I set my phone aside and called out my friend's name. There were a couple of seconds of silence before I heard loud footfalls as someone started running through the bottom floor of my house. I leapt out of bed and ran to the closet. They were already up the stairs by the time I had opened the door and stepped inside. That house had 3 rooms upstairs, 2 bedrooms on either side of the hallway, the one I was in and a spare, and a bathroom at the end. The bedroom doors were both closed, but the bathroom door was cracked open. I heard whoever was in my house thunder down the hallway past my door and into the bathroom. Thank God he did. That gave me enough time to open the attic access in the ceiling of my closet and hoist myself up. I had just started to lift myself up when the person ran back out of the bathroom. My feet were barely inside of the attic when my bedroom door burst open. I heard footsteps run into my room and stop. When they didn't see me in that room, they ran back to the hallway and into the other room, which just had boxes stacked in a corner, some weights, and a table where I painted my miniature models. I guess they decided that if someone was hiding, it would be in the bedroom because they charged back into my room and turned on the light. A moment later, the closet door was ripped open.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
I was crouched in my attic just a foot or so away from the access, so I could try to stop them if they started to climb up. From my vantage point, all I could see was from about their knee down. They were wearing dirty blue jeans with frayed cuffs and worn work boots. After a few seconds of looking in the closet, they stepped away and I heard a loud crash come from my room followed by a scream of frustration and anger. That scream was the most unnerving part of the incident for me. It reminded me far too much of my stepfather, who would scream in a similar way when he lost his temper. He would eventually be put in a mental hospital for several mental disorders that resulted in erratic and violent tendencies. The man in my house ran back down the stairs. I heard crashes and clatters as things were thrown around and furniture was knocked over. I stayed crouched in the attic. I left my cell phone when I ran for the closet, and I wasn't certain I could climb down without him hearing. After some time, the noises stopped. I started counting slowly. When I reached 1,000, I decided it was safe enough to climb down and call the police. The first thing I noticed when I exited the closet was the intruder had flipped my bed over, I assume in an attempt to find me. That was the loud noise I had heard after he stepped away from the closet. I couldn't find my cell phone, so I went to the landline by the bed and called the police. I waited in my room until I heard them call out from downstairs. The first floor was a mess, but I'd expected that. Chairs had been knocked over, the sofa had been flipped. All the books and pictures and knickknacks I had on my shelves were strewn across the floor. The cupboards in the kitchen had been opened and all the boxed and canned foods had been thrown to the ground. As far as I could tell, the only thing missing was a single knife out of the wooden block in my kitchen. The police checked the house from top to bottom. They found that the side door had been forced open by something like a crowbar. They also found a few cigarette butts along my fence line, along with some foil and an empty pen tube which the police said people used to smoke meth, so they think he had been watching my house for a while. I realized that he must have been out there smoking a cigarette when I got home. They collected up the evidence and told me I should stay with family or friends that night and get that door fixed as soon as possible. I opted just to not sleep. I moved a shelf over to block the broken door and spent the next couple of hours cleaning things up. I would often go to the window with a flashlight and shine it along the fence line where the police found the cigarette butts and foil, but I didn't see anything. The next day I called to have the door fixed and motion lights installed at the back and sides of my house. I ran a phone cable up into the attic and added a landline. I never wanted to be stuck up there without a phone again. Nothing else happened at that house, though. I lived there another 3 years without incident. One more precaution I took was practicing getting out of my bed, going to my closet and climbing into the attic as quickly and quietly as possible. I even kept at it when I moved, except now I go to a crawl space at the back of the closet instead of the attic. I try not to think about what would have happened if I had been a bit slower getting to the attic or if he hadn't gone into the bathroom at the end of the hall first.
Our official merch store is finally here. If you want to support more of our channel, check out our merch shop. The link is in the description down below. See you on the next video.